Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 313 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host once again. And today my guest is Fred Joyle. Now, Fred is a fascinating individual. His latest book, Super Bold, From Underconfident to Charismatic in 90 Days, teaches a systemic way for anyone to radically increase their boldness and confidence to a remarkable level in a very short period of time. And that you're going to hear, he started out as a very shy person in his youth, but pushed himself to become bolder, and as a result, met some amazing people, started successful businesses, and has graduated to the point where he can speak to audiences of, 5,000 or more with a lot of energy and enthusiasm. He's written two books on marketing, dabbled as a stand-up and improv comedian. By his own account, he acted in a few bad movies and some excellent TV commercials and visited over 44 countries around the world. So I'm sure you're going to find this interview pretty interesting, particularly for those of us who might identify as introverts or shy individuals in the legal practice and maybe want to make some adjustments or some changes there. So without any delay, here is Fred Joyle. Fred Joyle, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks for having me, Neil. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Well, I am pretty stoked to have you with us today. Fred, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
So I started many years ago in the advertising business and decided to take that skill and start a business called 1-800-DENTIST, which I ran for 30 years. And we had to kind of invent every aspect of the business. When we started, there was very little advertising for dentists going on. And we ended up spending hundreds of millions of dollars in television advertising over the course of 30 years and generated over $1 billion of revenue. Eventually sold the business as it was in decline because of Google, disintermediating all those kinds of businesses. But it was a great experience. I did really well, but learned a lot, made a lot of survivable mistakes, and along the way became a speaker and an author for the dental industry. And then decided I had a message that I really wanted to get out to people based on what I had learned in life, because I started out as a very shy and underconfident person, and I had to develop my boldness. I thought people were born that way, and I realized I could learn it, but I just had to be uncomfortable as I did it. And it just expanded and expanded. And then people would say, why are you like this? And I said, well, I wasn't always like this. Mm-hmm. And they say, really? How did you learn it? And I realized I had to make a systematic way that wouldn't take decades like it did for me. And so in October of last year, I released my book, Super Bold, From Underconfident to Charismatic in 90 Days. And it's a systematic way that anyone can build their boldness muscle, build their confidence and boldness to levels that would surprise themselves, but allow them to not miss opportunities, to not hesitate when it's important, and to really have a fulfilling life and chase their dreams.
Well, I mentioned to you on our pre-recorded call that I have been surprised to learn, and this says more about my ignorance than anything else, in doing this podcast for now the better part of 5 years, that there are lots and lots of attorneys who identified themselves as introverts or shy introverts, which came as a bit of a surprise to me. I thought all attorneys, if you made it to that position, it's because you were a loudmouth yakker like me, and where, you know, self-confidence wasn't an issue. But I was surprised to learn, and perhaps I shouldn't have been, but that, no, there's quite a few attorneys that, as I said, feel underconfident or shy and want to work on developing that boldness muscle because they feel that it would benefit them. And I think there's a lot of truth to that in the legal space. So tell me a little bit about the boldness muscle itself as you defined it. I mean, is it a mindset? Is it a set of skills that are reflective of an understanding, or is it a belief system, or I don't know, just what does that mean?
Well, it starts with a mindset shift.
Okay.
And then it becomes partly a social skill. A lot of times introverts or people who exhibit shyness in a lot of situations don't develop good social interactive skills because they're not engaging. They're not taking that risk, but also nobody teaches this sort of stuff in school. But the mindset really is to stop listening to that voice in your head that tells you to be afraid, basically, that something is going to happen that is going to be painful. That bold people don't fear rejection. They don't fear failure because they've pushed through it and found out most of the time they don't fail, and that they've reinterpreted rejection as meaningless to them. Whereas introverts take it as a personal affront and a reason to crawl back into their shell. And I was like that. And I can identify with it. But also the first step is to stop telling yourself you're shy, because shyness is a behavior. It is not a genetic thing, just as boldness is not a genetic thing. You are not shy with your spouse. You're not shy with your friends. You're probably not shy with your coworkers. So you are exhibiting shyness in certain areas. You're an introvert, maybe because you like to work alone. And one of the reasons I think there's a lot of lawyers who are introverts is that personality type that can really dig into documents and pay attention and focus like that is not necessarily an outgoing person. A lot of times the really outgoing lawyers are trial lawyers because they've got people who prep them because they're the performers. They love getting in front of a jury. They love, you know, cross-examining a witness. But they've built that. They tapped into something. But anybody can tap into it. When I say anybody, I'm telling you because I couldn't make a phone call when I was 20 years old, ask a girl on a date or any of that stuff. I can walk on a stage with 5,000 people now without preparation and do an hour lecture and not even be nervous, just be energized and having fun. And it doesn't even bother me that there's 5,000 people in the audience. And it's because I built my boldness muscle gradually by being uncomfortable. And I in my book, I have what I call the pride method, which is a systematic way to build this gradually so that you can summon it when you want, when it matters, when it's important, which comes up a lot in life. And your ability to meet people, interact effectively with people, communicate effectively with people is a life skill. And so in the book, I talk about the mindset. Then I talk about a bunch of social and communication skills that a lot of people don't know, like how to make somebody feel like the most important person in the room. This is a life skill. It is nothing innate about it, but it's really easy to do if somebody explains to you how to do it. And then you just do it a few times and you go, oh, well, that worked really well.
That was easy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can relate to this personally, but from the other extreme. So I can see that in the inverse, exactly what you're talking about. I remember very clearly at a very young age, somebody telling me that I could, you know, charm the heck out of my teachers and that was going to serve me well in life. And I tapped into that, probably to the extreme, probably to the annoyance of just about everybody around me. But I learned very early to speak openly and candidly to adults and to teachers. I was very comfortable doing that, tried to be polite and all. So I operated from the idea from the very beginning that, hey, it's just me. I'm just having a chat with you. And it didn't concern me at all. Now I can see if you were being told the other side of that story, if you had kind of a negative experience early on in life and somebody reinforced it by saying, well, you're kind of shy, or you should listen more and talk less. I can see how you then can develop that persona and run with it, and it may not serve you well later in life.
Yeah. I mean, if somebody's saying to you at 8 years old, don't be so shy, what you hear is that you're shy.
Exactly.
So they're programming that in for you.
Yeah, speak up for yourself, you know, reinforces, oh, I don't speak up for myself.
Yeah, and what happened is you tapped early into the positive feedback loop of just being bold, being outgoing. And as you said, most people have somebody telling them, speak when you're spoken to, or conversely, somebody pushing them to be bold when they don't have the equipment for it. They don't have the social skills for it, and they fail, and that feels bad. I mean, we have a deep primal need to fit in. I mean, it goes back to being on the African plain. If you got kicked out of the tribe, you were dead in a matter of days. So we're deeply programmed for that. And also, our bodies are designed to process a danger reaction. And our brain doesn't differentiate between psychological danger and physical danger. So it runs the same processes in the autonomic nervous system. We slow our breathing down. We perspire. We shut down our cognitive skills because they're not necessary in fight or flight. Mm-hmm. Our memory shrinks because it's not like we need to remember stuff. It's muscle memory is all we need. So all of that stuff is going on when we perceive danger, which some people perceive danger at a party or meeting a couple of strangers. And they've told themselves this terrible message is, I don't belong here, or I don't fit, or I am not worthy to talk to this person. You've never told yourself that, which is unique. Most people are playing those tapes often in their head.
Yeah. Now I can think of one of those, you know, scenarios where that voice comes ringing back to all of us in the legal profession, you know, quite often. And it's a story I hear frequently, people saying, just about the worst thing I can imagine is having to go to a networking event and walking into a room full of people I don't know. What do I have to say to everybody? And how do I'd rather just sit over here by the bar and have my gin and tonic and wait for the 2 hours to go by and where I can go leave and chalk up with another failed networking event. seems to me like that's a perfect opportunity to exercise these skills.
Yeah. And part of what I teach in the Pride Method is the Pride is an acronym for preparation, relaxing, insight, dosage, and everyday action. Mm-hmm. The D in dosage means don't put yourself in a situation where you're overwhelmed. If you say, oh, I'm going to a network event and there's all these people there, I don't want to meet all these people. Meet one. Get to know, talk to one person, and you don't have to know what you're going to say because you don't have to say anything except hello. Hi, I'm Neil. What's your thing? What do you do? Tell me the most interesting thing that happened to you this week. That's it. Anybody can say that, and you're off and running. You just start asking open-ended questions, and then don't. When they finally give you a chance to talk, don't go into a long monologue because somebody's finally letting you to talk. This is what a lot of people do when they're you know, introverts is when the floodgate opens and when they can finally talk to somebody, they talk about what they're passionate about in an unbroken streak for 10 minutes instead of letting the other person either let you know they're interested or, you know, let it go back and forth. But I don't, it's, if you approach those interactions like it has to be even, like it's a tennis match, that's the wrong mentality. It's not. You're pitching and they're catching, so to speak. That you're throwing out an open-ended question and letting them talk. And then instead of responding with your own story, say, tell me more about that. Tell me more about the trip to Rome. That sounds great. I mean, I've been to Italy, but I didn't have a great time. What was so fascinating about Rome? And they're going to tell you. And then, and you're going to find, if you listen and don't worry about what you're going to say, you're going to think of what else you want to ask them. Or, and maybe you offer them a little something, and then you're right back to saying, but tell me more about you. And now, you know what? That makes you fascinating. You don't need to do it with 50 people at a networking event. You eventually can.
Yeah.
But start with one, and it's a win.
I'm not sure if it was Michael Port who said this. I seem to connect this
statement. The speaker trainer?
Speaker trainer wrote the book, Steal the Show. It wrote a lot of books. Yeah, yeah. Be more interested than interesting.
Yeah, I mean, this goes all the way to back to How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yeah, you may have been quoting.
But that's it. Yeah. Yeah. Instead of trying to be interesting, be interested.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's lots of other scenarios that attorneys find themselves, I think, suffering from shyness and to maybe to their detriment. I don't know. It's not necessarily to say that being less extroverted is any less successful than being extroverted. However, I think there are some places where people wish they could be more bold. And sometimes that's with new clients, trying to present the proper demeanor to a potential new client. And can you address, you know, that scenario in the context of your system?
Yeah, this is very typical of, you know, I've worked for decades, obviously, in the dental industry. People accept huge treatment plans from dentists who are who project extreme confidence in their ability to deliver that treatment. I know terrific dentists, incredibly highly trained, who can't present a case over $6,000 because their confidence isn't there. And I know dentists who can present a $70,000 case, basically a giant full head reconstruction.
Yeah. Reconstruct this entire mouth.
Yeah, saw my head off and rebuild it. But it's the same thing with new client as an attorney. Your projection of confidence is what allows them to trust you. We look for all sorts of cues to trust somebody that are non-rational. Mm-hmm. And that's the definition of a con man. They are building confidence by using tricks that human beings fall for. Now, I'm not saying be a con man, obviously, but I'm saying be a confident person, be a confident man or woman. And that when boldness is just taking that confidence and going into action, meaning say the things you want to say. Say, you know, there's an 80% chance of winning this case if you work with my firm. If you go to other firms, I think it's more like 40. And then you just, that sort of confidence about yourself means something. And you also didn't say, I'm going to guarantee you're going to win, because that just sounds like BS.
Yeah, and people see through that right away.
Yeah, but if you say, as a lawyer, if I were a lawyer, which I know tons of them, I would say, look, any lawyer that tells you this is a slam dunk that you're going to win, run from that lawyer, because there is no such thing. And when a lawyer tells you what your odds are of winning and why that's true, that's who you should be listening to. But people are looking for a reason to trust you because they are wandering into the unknown in a legal case most of the time. This is arcane information to them. They don't know how to feel safe because they don't know what they're doing. So that's your job as an attorney, is to effectively communicate, you can trust me. And that comes from you radiating your confidence. And that is a life skill.
And that speaks to one of the communication skills that I think is necessary to affect this approach. Are there, you know, confident, you know, showing that you're confident, which is sometimes easier said than done, obviously. Are there other communication skills that are effective in improving our level of boldness?
Yes. If you are listening, if you are actively listening, okay, which is a tremendous life skill, to not be thinking about what you're going to say. You know how you can find out if you're not listening? You interrupt them. Because it's like, you don't even need to, I know what you're going to say, so I'm going to jump in with my thoughts. Instead of just not have no intention for what you're going to say until they've spoken. And then in that, is there something more you want to probe that's about what matters to them? I think the skill of figuring out what the actual pain point is to someone before you try to tell them what you're going to do is a tremendous presentation skill, but it's also a human interaction skill. It's the same thing you would do with your spouse, your mate. It's like, tell me what you're actually upset about. Well, you did this and this and this and that. Is it really that? Because, you know, I'm really interested. I don't want you to feel that way. Tell me more about that. Instead of becoming defensive and all of that stuff, just say, help me understand. I really want to understand. So I'm going to probe till I find out. And many times you find out it's something else. Yeah. But you have to be willing to suspend two things: your need to speak and your need to control the outcome.
Right.
Bold people never worry about the outcome. They worry about the actively pursuing the journey and discovering whatever might come.
More because the process.
A lot of times there's something better. My friend Chris Voss, who teaches all sorts of negotiation skills, yeah, he said, never become so attached to an outcome that you miss a better one.
True. Yeah. I've been lucky enough to see Chris speak a couple times at the Chris Game Changer Summit down in Atlanta. So for our listeners, if you ever get a chance to go down there, I'm always singing the praises of Mike Mogul and the Crisp video folks. But he had Chris Voss there, I think, 2 years in a row. And he's always a tremendous speaker.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you in part by the net profit CFO, Ryan Kimler. If that name sounds familiar, you might remember him as being a guest on episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, where we talked about his new company and how they can help you drive profit to your bottom line. I was so enamored by what Ryan had to say that I actually became a client. I called him up and said, I'm ready to take advantage of your expertise. And that's exactly what happened. So I'm now a very happy customer or client of the Net Profit CFO. But I'm also very pleased to welcome them as a sponsor to the show. So do you want to enjoy higher net profits without working longer or harder? As you learned in that previous episode, with just 9 simple numbers, Ryan will help you drive more profit to your bottom line, and he won't confuse you with all the details. If you want to increase your net profit, but don't like getting deep into the numbers, I highly recommend that you connect with Ryan. You can do that by going to netprofitcfo.com and download the Financial Clarity Dashboard. It's a great tool for getting the big picture of your financials. Today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you in part by my friend Mark Rockwell. Building a profitable law firm is difficult, particularly if you have no prior business experience. And sometimes even if you do, such as I did, you can still have difficulty building a profitable law practice. This often results in hard work, long hours, and low profits. If this resonates with you, you need to visit with my friend Mark Rockwell. Mark coaches individual attorneys as well as law firm leadership teams. Lawyers love working with Mark because he's different from other professional coaches. As a lawyer and businessman, Mark knows firsthand what it's like to overcome the challenges of growing a profitable firm. He'll help you do the same. Go to his website, coachrockwell.com, and download The 5 Mistakes Lawyers Make That Kill Their Careers. I promise you, you're not going to be disappointed in reading that. You'll get great insights on how to build a healthy, thriving law firm. Or you can give Mark a call directly at 503-784-7205. That's 503-784-7205. Or visit his website again at coachrockwell.com. That's coachrockwell.com. If you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast.
So we've talked a little bit here about the framework that that you have developed, the PRIDE framework for understanding the process of going from underconfident to charismatic. But this suggests that there's a systemic approach to doing so, as you say, within 90 days. Can you give us a sense of what that, you know, that flow is, that, you know, how one might set out on that journey and what's involved along the way?
Yeah. So the book, the last part of the book is a series of exercises that start very simply and control the dosage, the intensity of the experience, and you do them and you work your way up to more and more intense things that are uncomfortable, but that you can execute them, but only because you executed the first level. It's almost like when you're learning the piano, you have to learn scales before you can really figure out much else. So this is this builds you up. And the method, the PRIDE method, is you're going to prepare yourself. Let's say the simple task is you want to be able to talk to strangers. Okay, so you're going to start talking to people in line at Starbucks, whoever's in front of you. And you're going to, one, P, prepare what you're going to say. Oh, I'm going to compliment their glasses, or I'm going to compliment their purple hair, or that suit looks great on them. You are going to prepare something. Now, I'd always love to emphasize this, because it's true whether you're talking to meeting a stranger for the first time, or you're going on stage to do a lecture, or you're presenting to a team or a client. Your preparation is the foundation for spontaneity, because you have what you could say and you're ready to say, but in the moment, because you have prepared, you could discover something more appropriate in the moment if you're really paying attention. And it happens to me on stage all the time, because I know what I'm going to say, but then I'll say, wait a minute, this story fits here, and I'll just start to tell it. So that's the power of preparation. And nobody says in social interactions, you should prepare. No, we should somehow be good at it, even though we studied to get a driver's license or a fishing license or anything. But no, we're supposed to automatically know how to interact with people. We don't. And we're not good at it. And some people, when you get good at it, you go, oh, now I get why it works for some people and it didn't work for me for so long. So the second step is relaxing, using specific relaxing techniques, controlling your breathing and checking your physiology. to see where you're tensing up and just release that. We have an ability to relax ourselves. And I go into great detail on how to do it in the book. The next thing is insights. The I in pride is insights. Have that insight that when you talk to a stranger, you have no idea what's going on in their life. So you don't have to take on whatever their reaction is. If you decide to smile at 10 people every day, 9 of them are going to smile back and 1 isn't. You don't have to decide to hate yourself because that 10th person didn't smile back. You have no idea how bad a day they're having, or that they never smile at anybody. They've got bad teeth, whatever the heck it is. So that exercise of like, wow, almost everybody smiled back, shifts in your mind. And you have this insight, wow, that I don't have to take this on. And also, very important to understand several things that bold people understand is that most people are not thinking about you anywhere near as much as you think they are. They're thinking about themselves. They go back to themselves very quickly. But we can remember 20 years ago, this embarrassing thing that we said or did or whatever. Nobody who was there remembers except you. But you can bring it up and still feel bad about it, because you're still thinking about you. They're not thinking about you.
I'll give you a perfect example. I go back to my high school reunion all the time, and I've been out of high school for a long, long, long time. And I'll relate some story that still bothers me to this day with somebody. And then, well, they say to me, dude, I don't remember that at all. I don't know why you're worried about why you're worried about that. I don't remember you insulting me one bit.
Yep. Oh, but you've got it. It's right there in the top of your files.
Of course.
And the other thing that bold people know is that 99% of the time, nothing bad happens unless you label it as bad.
It's bad. Yeah.
It's a choice to be embarrassed. It's a choice to be humiliated. If I'm at a dinner and I spill wine on my shirt, I could go, oh no, everybody's going to be looking at me. They're going to think I'm clumsy. I'm going to think I'm a slob. They're going to be staring at the stain. First of all, they're not. It's not, some people won't even notice it, but you can do that, or you can just say, hey, this is why my dry cleaner loves me. And people will laugh, and they'll say, wow, he's totally comfortable looking like a slob. Because we all do clumsy things at some point. Nobody's perfect. This is the trap of introverts, is they need to be perfect before they can act. And nobody's perfect, but it's an excuse to not act. Oh, well, I don't have the perfect thing to say to this woman that I want to meet when I walk across the room and talk to her. So I'm not ready. I need to come up with the perfect thing. I get the wrong jacket on. You know, I wish I had, you know, gelled my hair, whatever the heck it is. That perfectionism is a barrier to action. Bold people, they walk in unprepared all the time, because I'll just figure out what to do as things go, because they've done it. They know that when you're relaxed, your creativity is working, your memory is working. When you're panicked, it's all shut down. They're not in panic mode. So they understand that nothing bad happens. But the most important thing that bold people do, and this is a powerful insight, is they are never the ones to stop themselves. They wait till somebody else stops them or tries to stop them. And they just, they proceed. They'll walk up to a nightclub and go to the short velvet rope line and say, you know, hi, I'd love to come in, you know. A bunch of my friends are in there, whatever the heck, they're going to take it. And they know that 9 times out of 10, the guy's going to go, you're not on the list, get out of line. But sometimes they're getting in, and that's all they care about. But they're radiating, I belong here. And that's powerful. I have learned to radiate that. And it's amazing how many doors it opens.
I think we got up to the letter D in pride.
Yep, which is dosage, which is controlling the intensity. And I already talked about it, is control the intensity of the experience as you build your boldness muscle. You wouldn't, if you were trying to get in shape,
don't try and do too much too soon.
Yeah. Well, if you're training for a marathon, first day out, you're going to run 26 miles.
No,
exactly. You're probably not even going to run one. You know, you're going to spend most of your time stretching, and But and it's the same thing with building your boldness muscle. You don't want to traumatize yourself so that you retreat. You know, you want to learn to do public speaking. Your first stage opportunity is 1,000 people. It's going to go badly, you know, because you're not ready for it. Go to Toastmasters and go in a safe environment where you're speaking for 20 people who are all trying to support you. And then until you say, wow, I'm feeling pretty good up here. I'm realizing that all the stuff I was nervous about, there's nothing to be nervous about. It's just a conversation. Yeah. And so you reprogram yourself at a level that you can understand. It is, you build it just like you would build any other muscle. So you have to control the dosage of it. And that's what the exercises are for. It's like, once you feel comfortable doing the first level of exercises, you move up to the next one. And a lot of the exercises are programmed to teach, are designed to teach you that nothing bad happens except in your mind. The example I use is when you see a sign that says employees only, go in. Nothing bad will happen. No one will beat you to death on the other side. Most of the time, no one will say anything because you're acting like you walked in. The only thing keeping you out is the sign. It's not, nobody's in there policing whether somebody came in or not. If you walked in, they assume you belong there. And if somebody says, hey, this is for employees only, you can say, oh, I am an employee, just not here. Yeah. And they'll look at you like you're nuts and then you leave. But you do it to realize you had all this anxiety about going through a door that had a sign on it as if something terrible was going to happen. Yeah. And nothing terrible happened. Because you weren't even supposed to go in, and somebody asked you to leave, so you left.
The E in pride, what does that align?
Everyday with? Action.
Okay.
So just build like you muscle. Would do anything, what you do every day aggregates. What you don't do every day deteriorates. If you brush your teeth when you felt like it, you'd brush every couple of weeks. If you exercise when you felt like it, you'd exercise a couple of times a year. If you decide to do something every day, if you decide to work on your boldness muscle, I'm going to talk to a stranger every day. I'm going to make a bold move every day. Your brain says, well, I guess this is who we are. And what happens is you get this positive feedback loop from constantly doing it instead of waiting for the opportunity to be bold and testing out. You're going to have inch along. That's why I say 90 days. If you do this for 90 days, you'll transform yourself by doing it every day. It's the power. And this is a life skill to whatever's important to you, get to it every day.
Well, Fred, let's
have a good conversation with your kids every day. Practice your musical instrument that you love every day, even if it's for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And the brain says, this is who we are, rather than the brain knows when you're a dabbler. It knows when you're a dilettante, and it doesn't support it. It doesn't put it in the forefront, and you don't get to work on it in your unconscious. If you're writing a book, write every day, because you'll work on it in your subconscious at the same time. If you write, for an hour every weekend, your brain says, "I'm not a writer. You're not a writer. You're just occasionally writing like a hobby."
And it's easy to skip that weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It makes it more difficult to maintain that consistency. And without that consistency, you're not identifying with the intent, connecting with the intent.
Yeah. And the hardest thing in life is to start stuff. And once you say, I'm going to do it, it is something I don't have to decide if I'm going to do it today. I'm going to do it. Like I said, if you only worked out when you felt like it, you just wouldn't work out that often. But how many workouts have you done where you didn't feel like it, and 5 minutes in, you were off and running because you just started on the bicycle, or you just started lifting weights? And I've even done it where I said, look, I don't feel like working out today. I'm just going to do some push-ups and sit-ups. Before you know it, I'm doing a 30-minute workout.
Yeah.
But I set myself up by saying, look, I'm going to let myself off the hook with just some quick exercises, but I've broken through the start barrier.
Well, that's a technique I need to work on a little more. So anyway, Fred, tell our audience again, what's the name of the book and how can they go about getting a copy?
It's called Super Bold, The subtitle is From Underconfident to Charismatic in 90 Days. And charisma is just you're radiating your confidence in every situation. That's all. You act like you belong everywhere, and people are drawn magnetically to that. That's why I talk about charisma. It's not some magical thing that some people are born with. You can develop it. But you can get my book on Amazon. What do you want to say?
No, that's good.
Yeah, so you can get it on Amazon, on Kindle, on Audible. It's me reading the Audible. You can go to my website, fredjoyle.com, just straight, no dots or dashes or anything. You can download the first chapter of the book. If you're reading it in digital form, like audio or Kindle, you can download a PDF of the exercises, because you're going to want a physical version of the exercises. So you can get that on my website. And also, I'm launching in Los Angeles a 2-day Super Bowl transformational workshop where I'm really going to accelerate people on their boldness path. I'm really excited about doing it June 24th and 25th in LA. And you can find out more about that on my website as well.
All right. Well, we'll make sure that all of that is in the show notes. And end of June, I got to check my calendar. I think I might be in Southern Cal. So maybe I'll have to come drop in and see you.
Yeah, you might have to pop in and see what's happening.
I might have to exercise some boldness and maybe even sign up. So yeah, that'd be great. Well, Fred, listen, it's been a joy to have you on the program today. I do appreciate you taking the time. I think it's a book that solo and small firm practitioners can really benefit from. I think there's a need for it. And I'm delighted to have you be with us as a guest today.
Well, thanks for having me on, Neil, and I hope everyone chases their dreams with boldness and vigor.
It sounds great. Thanks for being on The Law Entrepreneur.
Well, there you have it, fellow law entrepreneurs. Thank you for being with us this week. I want to thank our sponsors, Ruby Receptionist, a longtime sponsor of ours, my personal reception service, Mark Rockwell. Coach Rockwell is a very, very fine attorney coach. You would be well advised to look him up and consider retaining his services. And our newest sponsor is Net Profit CFO, the fractional corporate financial officer that, again, I am a client of. I can't recommend them highly enough, and I'm delighted to have them as our sponsor. If you enjoyed today's episode, please go to wherever you listen to your podcast and leave us a review and a rating. That helps tremendously in terms of making our podcast visible. Be sure to share it with friends and family. Visit us on our social media platforms. Just search for The Law Entrepreneur. You'll find us everywhere on Twitter, Facebook, and the like. So until next week, thanks again for being a listener here on The Law Entrepreneur.